Welcome to the second episode of Season 3 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Monday the 1st of March 2010, and in this episode we're going to talk about the new Ubuntu One music store and interview lead developer and friend of the show, Stuart Langridge. We'll discuss today's announcement from Canonical, although we're recording on Monday, so it's Wednesday's announcement, which will be today when you listen to this. Mm. Well, it might be yesterday.
The DeLorean is in the car park.
Yes. And we'll, of course, cover the latest news, events, a bit about Ubuntu, and feedback. I'm Alan, and with me this week is everyone. Hello, Tony.
Hello. Does that mean we found enough microphones?
Yes.
Finally, five.
And stands and cables.
And five people.
What have you been doing, Tony?
I've been helping my cousin use Ubuntu. He's used computers for years and is a bit of an IT, he's an IT company. And for whatever reason, he suddenly decided to try Ubuntu after years of pestering at Christmases. And
Did you send him Christmas cards or Ubuntu CDs?
I don't speak to him. That's maybe why he tried to use Ubuntu. Yeah, no, it's great. So having come around from the dark side a bit, he's given it a go and he absolutely loves it.
Excellent.
But of course.
And why wouldn't he?
Well, absolutely. He had a DVB thing, and well, I wasn't sure it was just going to work, but he plugged it in, and a thing came saying, you need to install the firmware, click here to install the firmware, and
wow.
It did. And a couple of other bits and bobs, which sort of helped him through, and it was all good.
And it just worked.
And it just worked. He's setting up network mounts and all sorts.
Yay. Wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
A good news story.
Yes.
How about you, Laura? What have you been up to? And hello.
Hello. Getting caught out by the Twitter fish, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Can you actually explain how that happened? Because I don't actually know.
It sends you a DM. And then if you click the link, it takes you to a Twitter login page. But it's not the real Twitter login page. But it looks like it.
Dope.
The trouble is that on a phone, you can't see the URL.
Yeah.
And whatever other clues you might see on a PC just don't happen to be there in a URL. And the original message was plausible from the person it came from. So even today I got into work and I was still getting people emailing me internally saying I'd just sent them a weird DM and would I change my password?
Oh, golly.
To be fair, by the time we saw it in Firefox, it said, this is a phishing scam, and big red things went off. But obviously, as you say, not on a phone. Mm. Quite an interesting kind of attack vector, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe we should all have Firefox on our phones. I don't know.
My phone's slow enough.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm a little bit on the tired side, to be fair, but I'm okay.
What have you been up to?
I've actually just got back from being at Canonical in London at the Milbank Towers.
It's pretty there, isn't it?
Oh, the view is amazing. And I imagine that majority of the employees do not appreciate the view they've got there. It's really
Certainly the employees who work on Chris Jones's side of the building, because they look out over...
Because he blocks out all the light?
No, no, he's on the wrong side, so all he gets to see is a power station. Anyway, you see all the sights from there. It's wonderful.
And we'll talk more about what you talked about there later.
Yes, I think we will. It should be interesting.
Cool. Simon.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm tired.
Oh,
mad week at work, even though it's Monday, mental day.
Mad week, you've done a full week in one day.
It feels like it.
Gosh, you're busy. What have you been doing?
I've been playing with Lucid, actually. I downloaded Lucid. In fact, we talked about how the hell I was going to keep my setup, because I got a brand new laptop. Just got it nice and sweet and thought I'd do a reinstall.
Yeah, this is working perfectly. Now I'm going to completely mess it up.
There you go. It was just working, so I wanted to do something new. So I downloaded Lucid 64-bit. And then we spoke about how on earth do you keep your home but do a new install, which I didn't realize you could do. And you can. You just install. As you get to the partitioning bit, there's a tick that you untick and allows you to install and keep your home. So I kept everything and I got a brand new install.
Oh, and you moved from 32 to 64-bit along the way?
Yeah.
Cool.
And
it's working all right?
Yeah, there's the odd sort of little thing, but nothing catastrophic. Nothing's really properly crashed and you know, left itself unusable. So
is the odd little thing by any chance Flash?
Yes.
There we go.
Go on then, Mr. Pope. What about you? What have you been up to?
I've just got to check my pay thing to see what I've done. Oh, yeah, I've been blogging a lot.
A lot? Yeah. A huge amount?
Yeah, you've been like Lucasade or something.
You should take a leaf out of his book, mate.
Well, Dave blogs loads, but they're all in his draft.
Actually, yeah, I do have about 40 drafts. But yeah, I mean,
you've got 40 giraffes?
But yeah, what's been like your motivation there? Because you've had like more than one a day, haven't you?
It's because I've been trying to help my mum set up a PC, my Mumbuntu thing. So a lot of the posts have been related to that, to setting up a computer for my mum. So, yeah, if you want to see the posts, then they're quite lengthy, and yeah. I would completely understand if you don't want to read them.
Too long.
Did not read.
Yeah. Too long. Too much. I will summarise them at some point in the future with another immensely long post. Which isn't really a summary. So, should we get on with it?
Yeah.
Sounds like a fun-packed show.
With a mouthful of cake.
This week we've seen some interesting developments in the Lucid version, where we've got, in Rhythmbox, we've got the Ubuntu Music Store.
Ooh.
Now, we've talked about this a little bit before, but now we've seen some sneak peeks of what it can do and things like that. We thought we would speak to Stuart Langridge.
Stuart's on the line now. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Hello, you PC guys. How's it going?
Hello. How's your podcast?
Oh, well, you know, we go from strength to strength, as I understand it. That would be shotofjack.org.
Good one.
Yes.
So we've spoken to you before about the store. And we talked to you, I think it was at UDS, maybe.
Yes.
And
it was.
And you told us what the plans were for it. And now some of us have actually seen it. So tell us what the state of play is right now. What state is the store in?
Right now, at the moment, the Ubuntu One Music Store is in beta test. I have a small but elite team of beta testers
yes,
who are thrashing out the more serious bugs in the process before we open it up to everyone in the world.
When you say small, how small?
Well, the reason that we're in beta test rather than opening up to everybody, I appreciate that Lucid, the 10.04 release, is in alpha anyway, but because the music store involves you spending money and then getting music,
right?
I don't really want to open it up to a wide beta test if people are going to be spending money and they're not getting music. Yeah. So,
and has that happened for any of the beta testers?
No. part of the reason that I picked the small but elite group of beta testers that I did was because I knew there were people where I could say, if it decides not to give you a song that you've paid for, come and talk to me and I'll sort it out. So it's just thrashing out the details of the process by which, you know, the money gets all the way to the far end and then the song comes all the way back to you. And that's what we've been working on as part of the beta test over the last week. And we are nearly at the end of that period. I think we've got most of those issues out. There are still going to be lots of bugs. As I say, Lucid is in alpha, and anyone who doesn't want to run software with bugs in should not be running a pre-release version of Ubuntu. But we are very nearly now at the position where we can say, okay, fine, we'll open it up to people who are using Lucid Alpha 3.
So when will people be able to get involved? In the beta phase?
Yes, I would say so. Hopefully we should have something released before Beta 1.
Oh, right, okay. And the music we found out this week is being provided by 7 Digital, is that right?
Yes, correct. 7 Digital are the... We went looking for a commercial partner. As you can imagine, Canonical isn't in the business of going to individual bands and record labels and licensing music off them, so we wanted a commercial partner to do that side of the business.
Do you mean they didn't just send you down to HMV with a bunch of record tokens?
They did not, rather disappointingly. I was kind of hoping they'd just deliver a carton full of record tokens to my house. Can you just buy record tokens? Do they even exist anymore? We went looking at the different people and settled on 7 Digital.
Now, one of the things that a few of us poking around on the site discovered was that we could find an Ubuntu-branded 7 Digital store by going to a certain URL. And, I posted a few screenshots on my blog and a few other people looked at it, and it was all very interesting. But that's not how people are going to use it, is it?
No. The store's to be used in Rhythmbox at the moment.
And Rhythmbox is the only player?
Rhythmbox is the only player that we're building the thing for. That we very carefully built the stuff that runs the store in two separate halves. The bulk of the work is done in, so I have to be a bit technical here, so non-developer people prepare to be bored. The bulk of the store is basically a GTK widget, and that does all of the stuff to do with actually which music you want to buy, paying for it, all that kind of thing. And then the bit that puts that into Rhythmbox takes care of hooking that up to specifically Rhythmbox things, like making sure the music shows up in your Rhythmbox library, making sure that when you preview a song, it plays through Rhythmbox. And one of the big reasons we wrote it like that is precisely so it can be embedded in other players.
And who would do that?
To, for instance, make it available in Banshee, they'd only have to write, they'd only have to redo the Rhythmbox bit of the plugin, which is quite small, rather than all the rest of it.
And who would you expect would do that? Would that be something Canonical would do, or is this going to be something you would expect the community to do?
We're certainly not doing it for Lucid.
Okay.
Our primary goal is to support the default Ubuntu install, and the default Ubuntu music player is Rhythmbox. It's come up for discussion at the last couple of UDSs. If the default music player in Ubuntu was Banshee, we'd have done Banshee. But our primary goal is to give people what they'll have out of the box on the desktop, and that's Rhythmbox.
So while still saying on the geeky line there, at the moment it's my understanding that you're embedding a website essentially into the application, and you're working with that. Do you think there'll become a time when you'll be able to extract it right down to have to be able to search and buy music via like a Python function or something? You know, so you have a full API to access it.
It's certainly possible. far be it from me to comment on what I'll be working on a year from now. But doing that kind of thing is certainly technically doable. It'd be quite a lot of work, but it would potentially be doable if that was the direction we decided to go in.
One of the questions that's come up a lot is the fact that the music that's downloaded is in MP3 format, and we don't play MP3s out of the box because we don't have the codec, because we can't ship the codec, and so we auto-install, or, you know, partial, half-manual, half-auto-install this codec to let it happen. And that seems to have generated a lot of comment that we should be delivering music in Ogg or FLAC or some other more open, more free, less, you know, evil, whatever you want to call it. How do you think you're going to be able to respond to those criticisms?
Well, realistically, we are not currently in a position to go to record labels who decide on this kind of thing and say, can you please provide the music in Ogg format, in Ogg Vorbis, or in FLAC? They provide it as MP3, and that's all they do. Now, there's a case to be made that the fact that it's an MP3, which means we can actually play it on Ubuntu, is something of a victory by comparison with the DRM-encoded Windows media formats that it all used to be in. Certainly, if the record labels decide to change their mind and do things in Ogg Vorbis, that would be absolutely brilliant from our perspective, and we'd love to see that. And I personally am of the opinion that one good way to provide that pressure is to say, look at how successful the Ubuntu One Music Store has been. And then we get a louder voice in making that case to record labels.
I've seen that argument put, and the counter-argument being, so we have to give them a load of money, you know, we have to show we're good for it. And I think a lot of people are kind of unhappy about that, the fact that you have to give them the money first before they'll see that as goodwill, and, you know, you can actually petition them. You know, look, we've got all these people who are buying your music. They could still say no.
It would be, yeah, they could do, absolutely. It would be great to have Ogg format, but most of the people I know have players that play MP3s. They're quite happy with MP3s. Their phones play MP3s. If they use it as an MP3 player, they've got an iPod or something. And so, you know, in the same way that we're supporting iPods in Rhythmbox, because we want people to be able to use the stuff that they've got, giving them songs that they can play by the same token, to me, seems reasonable.
Flying Squirrel on Twitter, it's a cool name, says, is Ubuntu One Music Store more about providing a cool service or generating revenue? And are there more revenue-generating services coming?
Oh, interesting question. from my point of view, it's about providing a cool service. That's what I've been working on. You know, I want to make it as cool as possible. Obviously, there is a revenue motive there. One of the things that we'd like to do is make some money, because then that allows us to do things like fund the Ubuntu One team to do more cool things and fund the Ubuntu project as a whole to do more cool things. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's about one or the other, really. It's all the things together. We want to make something great because we like making great things.
And it's got to make business sense.
Yes.
Now, it's called the Ubuntu One Music Store. Does that mean it integrates very closely with the Ubuntu One file sharing and distribution system that you've worked on before?
Yes, it does indeed. When you buy songs, they are first stored in your Ubuntu One cloud storage, and then that automatically comes down to your computer. As you know, if you're using Ubuntu One and you've got a file in Ubuntu One, it's then synced down to all of your machines. And that's exactly how the music store works as well.
So just to clarify, if I buy one song and I've got eight machines registered to a Ubuntu One account, it will download that song to all eight machines?
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty nifty.
And you don't download it on the one you're sat at the time. You don't download the music to that one first, and then it goes up to the cloud and then out to the other seven machines?
Correct.
It
goes into the cloud first and then down.
What was the reason for engineering it that way around?
There's a number of weird technical licensing reasons around how we can deliver music to people in the context of an open source application on people's desktops. And it's also a big part of it is that we think it's a really useful way of doing it. So you've automatically got the music. It's you can imagine a future in which this is useful on things like mobile devices, where it just downloads to the cloud and doesn't actually download to your machine, to your phone immediately. So you can just play things as and when you want them, or you can buy stuff from one machine and have it appear on others.
Would it also be true, though, that given you only get 2 gig free, well, only, you get a whole 2 gig free, and I'm a beta tester, and I've already clocked up 764 meg of my Ubuntu One storage just through buying music.
That's a lot of Britney.
Yeah, you didn't know she'd made that many tracks, did you?
Because I honestly didn't know Lady Gaga had done that many songs, but okay, fine, carry on.
So surely part of the motivation is to get users to fill up their Ubuntu One folder so that they then pay for the bigger folder.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to deny that's there, but the motive is not primarily to say, ha ha ha, the more music people buy, the more they're likely to pay for extra storage. It's done that way primarily because we think it's the best way to deliver stuff.
But presumably, once you've actually purchased the song and it's coming on your computer, you can then remove it from your Ubuntu One music store and put it somewhere else on your hard drive.
If you wanted to, yes.
So, you know, there's no enforcing you to go over your limit if you buy your whole collection through that.
Correct.
No, but you lose the ability to sync your music across all your machines.
Yep.
So, MattB90 on Twitter said, what happens to your next music store purchase when your Ubuntu One account's full up?
Part of the reason I'm hesitating here is that it's one of the things we're still discussing.
Go, Matt.
So I don't have a good answer for that question at the moment. We will have an answer. I'm just not 100% sure what it is yet.
So you're deliberating about whether to let people go over or whether to just stop them being able to download or something.
Well,
you have to stop them before they
The discussion is ongoing on that point, exactly what will happen.
Okay, so when this actually hits the wider audience and it's stable software, so if people purchase a song and they do have an issue, either it doesn't work or it's poor quality or anything, do they actually contact Canonical or do they contact 7Digital if they, you know, to raise a concern?
I don't know. I would like to have an answer to that question, and we will have an answer by the time Lucid is released. But at the moment, I don't exactly know.
It's certainly not common for people buying music from, say, Amazon to file a bug when something goes wrong.
Yes.
So if our target audience are the kind of, you know, MP3 buying public,
you'd expect them to be able to do what you do in the course of any other retail transaction.
Contact the customer service, though.
Yeah, customer service.
We could just give out your home phone number, Ak, if that's...
Well, you could do that, but...
So, should we put...
I believe I'd rather I didn't. I don't know exactly how that will work.
Okay.
Well, fair enough.
I'm sure you can keep us posted, so that's great.
Yes, we will. We will have some kind of answer about that.
Cool.
Other music stores are available, and...
They sound like the BBC.
Well, we are the Radio 4 of Linux Podcasts.
Other podcasts are available.
No, they're not. So, given that other stores are available and we're only providing, I say only is a reserve word, we're providing, hey, we've got this music store, but it is just 7digital and there are lots of other music stores out there. Are we stifling choice by, which is kind of the backbone of open source and free software, by enforcing one store?
We're not enforcing a store.
Well, Rhythmbox doesn't have a plugin for Amazon, and it doesn't have a plugin for Play or whatever other stores.
I agree. The Ubuntu One team, have chosen to deliver an Ubuntu One store, and we think that we're building it in a way that people are going to like.
Mm-hmm.
There are already two other stores in Rhythmbox, Jamendo and Magnatune, both of whom sell music. Amazon already have a downloader thing, don't they?
Yeah, well, it's really
good. I've certainly used it in the past. Presumably, there's no reason why they couldn't integrate something into Rhythmbox if they wanted to. They just didn't want to provide a really well integrated experience for Ubuntu. They want to give you give us a separate little application that you had to install separately and doesn't really integrate with the rest of your stuff.
Right,
that's fine. That was their decision, you know.
Mm.
And that's exactly the same thing with the other music stores.
Okay, and the last question we've had in through Twitter is from Josh Holland, who says, will the Ubuntu One Music Store carry Severed Fifth?
it won't do in the initial release because, those of you who haven't heard of Severed Fifth, that's Jono Bacon's recording project. And as far as I'm aware, he hasn't approached anyone about a record deal or approach any of the people who do independent music.
It's only a matter of time, surely.
It is surely only a matter of time. There are ways of getting your band's music into the Ubuntu One Music Store via 7digital. We've got a note in the in our frequently asked questions list. If you could put up a link to that, that would be rather handy.
Yep.
There are a couple of agencies, independent labels, who it's good to approach if you want to see a way of getting your music into the 7digital and label catalogues, and therefore into the Ubuntu One Music Store. It's a slightly roundabout approach, but that is a way of doing it.
I did actually search for Severed Fifth on the Ubuntu One Music Store, and I pointed out on Twitter that Severed Fifth isn't in the Ubuntu One Music Store, and Dave Murphy came back with, well, that's because it's a music store.
I've heard some of the new stuff.
Yeah, that is good.
Doing, and it's actually not that bad.
Damned by faint praise.
Well, I'm not a massively death metal fan.
And you had to live with it.
But
the music that you like, is it in the 7digital store?
Yes.
Okay.
So far, I've not found, with the notable exception of AC/DC, who, as far as I can tell, aren't available anywhere.
Good.
It's not clear to me whether they just don't like the idea of their music being downloadable, or whether it's their record label or what, but you can't seem to buy AC/DC music anywhere at all.
Mm.
But I've now been testing the store for only about 2 or 3 days longer than my beta test team have. And I've bought 40 or 50 songs, I think. And every time I've thought of a song, I've just gone and bought it, and it's been there.
Cool.
That's good.
Okay,
I've probably got pretty mainstream, boring music tastes, but...
Okay, so if people got further questions, some of them might be answered in FAQ you mentioned earlier. So.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll put the link up.
We've deliberately tried to put that together so it covers most of the questions that people have asked. We've been paying attention to there's been quite a lot of blogosphere excitement, use the dread word, about the music store with screenshots led by your very own Alan Pope.
Yeah.
We've been paying attention to posts on different websites and the comments that people are leaving, and trying to pull a consistent set of questions out of those that we can then answer through things like the FAQ.
Well, I think it's fair to say that Ubuntu One Music Store is unique in Linux distros. It's the first time something like this has been tried. It's really exciting, and I'm sure there are lots and lots of people who are keen to give it a go when Lucid Beta comes out and they can finally have a crack at it.
Mm.
I hope so. I really think that it's something that will hopefully at least appeal to our mass of real people who are out there thinking,
as opposed to all those other non-real people.
People like us, realistically, we have different needs to most users of Ubuntu. My dad, for example, is thoroughly excited about the idea of a music store so we can go and buy Billy Fury records.
Again.
I did point out to him that he bought all these things as 45s about 30 years ago. He said, I'd like them now and be able to listen to them on my television.
Cool.
And reaching those people, I think, is really interesting. And one way of doing that is by letting them have the music that they want.
That's a great note to wrap it up on. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us this evening.
No problem, and good luck with the podcast.
Thank you.
As ever, always a
and,
pleasure.
And you do a Mickey Mouse podcast, what's it called?
That would be Shot of Jack.
Marvellous.
Where you are the Bobby Ball to John O'Bacon's Tommy Cannon.
Well put.
Thanks very much.
Cheers,
Stuart.
Mate. Good night.
Thanks, Stuart.
See ya.
It's time for the news.
Matt Hassay, the new COO at Canonical, has outlined his top priorities and goals in an interview with Robert Gilippini. In a nutshell, it boils down to enterprise, enterprise, enterprise. Marketing, community, community, growth.
He's a big Star Trek fan, is he?
I think he's been taking long lessons from Jono's community, community, community there, isn't he?
I think so, yes.
So what's a coup?
It's the chief operating officer.
Excellent. So he's the boss.
Yeah, he came from...
You know, he's not the top boss, though, is he? Because Jane Silbert is now...
CEO.
She's the CEO. Yeah, so he makes the... Oh, I don't know, to be honest.
He's the second boss.
You're a director of a company, aren't you? Not one that has a COO, though.
They're all Dave.
Something very long and quite boring has happened in the Fedora project.
I didn't think you were going to leave that comment
in. Yes, I'm going to.
Oh, okay, well, we'll link to the story. It's just a lengthy post about, you know, the...
internal process.
Yeah.
And the directions where they're going wrong, I understand, isn't it?
Well, possibly, yeah. And it's worth, you know, reading to learn from that, and maybe we can avoid going in the same direction, perhaps. The Guardian has reported that US-based lobby group, which represents the RIAA and MPAA, has asked the US government to add India, Brazil and Indonesia to a special watch list. The list restricts the ability of countries to trade with the US, and the countries have done nothing more than encourage the use of open source software.
This is really quite a scary story.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was about... it devalued the principle of proprietary software. That was one of the main things they were tugging on. And it just seems absolutely wrong, the fact they're trying to put piracy and open source software as the same thing.
Mm. Yeah, and they were quite blatant about the fact that it was because they had been encouraging open source, because the Indonesian government has sent around things saying, please prefer to use open source where you can and stuff. And they were saying they weren't pretending it was something else and using it as an excuse to blacklist them. They were saying, you're doing open source, you don't respect our intellectual property things. It goes back to the free software is communism thing, basically.
But equally, our UK government at the moment has actually said they will encourage open source software.
Yep. Yeah. So does that how long is it going to be until we can't watch the latest James Bond or Hulk movie as a result?
Do trade with America. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, but we've got a special relationship, so we'll be fine.
They might just put more boring trailers on the front of the videos.
Version 2.6.33 of the Linux kernel has been released, including major updates to the Nouveau open source NVIDIA driver.
I do hope one day that thing's finished.
Actually, no, the major thing about the next Ubuntu release is I actually understand that that driver is actually the default rather than the NV driver for the first time.
It is, but it's still not got 3D ready yet.
Yeah, but the progress it's made in such a short time.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's fascinating.
Do you remember, were you at UDS or was it Tony when we sat in the room where they were talking about, oh, no, it was
no, I didn't get into any of the rooms. I had to sit in a cupboard with a video camera.
Sorry, not UDS. FOSDEM.
FOSDEM. Yes.
FOSDEM. And there was a room when they described the Nuvo project, and it was quite amazing, and everyone thought, oh, crikey, this is the start of something big, and other people were thinking, well, they're never going to get there, and, well, here we are with it being a default driver in a major...
That's brilliant.
...Linux distro. It's fantastic.
Open source Twitter clone Status.net has started doing commercial support, with Motorola and Canonical among the first customers.
Mm-hmm. So that's status.net is the Identica thing?
Yes. No, it's the Laconica thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Laconica became status.net for some reason. But it's what drives Identica.
Laconica sounds so much better.
Yeah, but I think status.net, you know,
says
my status, you know.
But, I mean, interesting, interesting sites such as Launchpad and other sites are actually do have Identica as the main... as the main microblogging platform that it links to for its service updates.
It's not really surprising given the people behind Launchpad are open sourcey people. And
only recently.
And with Twitter with Twitter taking up advertising, more people might start to use status.net.
Does advertising really ever stop people using a service? Surely they just block it. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Google didn't use advertising until it had, like, a critical mass of people who were, you know, basically...
So we'll see that on status.net at some point.
The government's latest attempt to demonstrate how well they understand digital rights issues will close down Wi-Fi hotspots in cafes and coffee shops across the country. The Digital Economy Bill puts strict new record-keeping requirements in place, which many smaller firms will not be able to meet.
Neither will individuals. I'm not going to keep a log for my free Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So do you have open Wi-Fi then?
Yep.
Huh. Okay.
Well, you will be responsible.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's on your connection as a result.
I mean, that equally means that we have trouble in Studio A or Studio B because, you know, you have to keep logs of what's been used.
Yeah, I have to keep logs of what you do on my Wi-Fi when you come to my house.
Exactly.
You don't, do
I
you?
Would under...
Yeah, do you? Would under this.
I record all the traffic.
You don't.
I do, and then I analyse it for passwords.
Oh, I don't... It's the passwords I don't mind. It's things I look at.
No, but you don't, though, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, yeah. Good.
But under the Digital Economy Bill, that's the sort of thing that coffee shops and cafes and libraries or whatever would have to start to do.
Mm.
So it's a huge requirement. And basically, they're worried that only big... institutions like the cloud, you know, big providers will be able to meet the requirements.
I just thought of an application. You could write an application that created fake logs, and all it would do is just fill it up with Facebook. And if the law came around and asked you for the log file, you just generate a quick thing full of Facebook logs. There you go. Everyone came in and visited Facebook.
It's a bit of a nonsense, isn't it, really? However, I'm saying I don't agree with what they're doing. I'm not sure that quite matches the sort of principle of what they're trying to achieve here.
Okay.
Well, that's part of the problem.
Maybe
if you can do that quickly and you can, what the hell's the point?
Quickly, yeah, you can write it in quickly and everything.
No. Three Google executives have been sent down for 6 months by an Italian court for hosting a video showing a boy with Down syndrome being bullied. Prosecutors claim that the video wasn't removed quickly enough in response to complaints. The executives were found guilty of invasion of privacy.
Wasn't it taken down within hours?
Well, the article says a couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it was on Google Video. And there were complaints and didn't get taken down quickly enough.
I thought it was a suspended sentence. I mean, one's actually going to prison for it.
No, it's a conviction.
Oh, yeah. Commercial, for working for someone, you're getting a criminal record. Yeah.
Joy's a bit of boss.
We have some events.
We do. The first one is Maker Faire on Saturday and Sunday, the 13th and 14th of March in Newcastle. Not very far away, but we've only just heard about this one. Maker Faire is a two-day, family-friendly event that celebrates the do-it-yourself mindset. It's for creative, resourceful people of all ages and backgrounds who like to tinker and love to make things. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Hmm.
Looks like it could be fun.
Yeah, great stuff. Make have an excellent news feed, and they have some superb little kits and things and stuff that you can make. And you don't have to be, you know, fantastic with a soldering iron.
Mm. Well, some of it's stuff. Crafty stuff, and some of it is, fabrics. And it's not all Arduinos and soldering irons, like you say.
I wonder if, given that it's in Newcastle, they'll be using Linux Mint.
I think everyone missed that.
Apart from you.
Tumbleweed.
Yeah. The Southeast Linux Fest is on June 11th, 12th and 13th.
And we have a promo to play.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Riff Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
A quick update on OggCamp. 1st and 2nd of May 2010, it's going to be bigger and longer than last year. The venue is going to be the Black E in Liverpool. We've got a number of sponsors, which we can tell you about.
We've got Linux Format, who are our media partner again. And, in fact, if you look in the Linux Format April edition, we get a mention, which is quite cool.
Nice little article, yeah.
And it talked about us briefly last issue as well.
Yeah, they did, yeah. They've been and really good.
By next issue, and there'll be something extra in there too.
Yes, and they've also given us a really good offer. If you go to oggcamp.org, there's a really good subscription offer. So while you're reading about the conference, you can get cheap subscription to Linux Format.
Wicked. Silly not to.
And we've also got sponsorship from the lovely people, the Allens at the Open Learning Centre, and Linux Emporium, OpsView, and Bitfolk.
Magic.
Yeah, they've all been really helpful and really great in
brilliant.
Supporting us. Yes.
And if any other companies or individuals would like to sponsor OggCamp,
give us prizes.
Yes. Yeah, prizes for a raffle.
Prizes or cold hard cash, and then we'll be fine.
Of course, the night before. On the Friday night, there's the Rat Hole Roadshow, which is a special free culture gig. Is it in the same venue?
No, it's another venue, the name of which escapes me temporarily. But it's in Liverpool.
It's nearby.
And it's being run by Dan from the Linux Outlaws.
All the details are on the website.
They are on the website.
Yep. So it's a conference, but it's kind of an unconference or a bar camp where we don't have a schedule beforehand because we're that organised. And the idea is it's intentional, honest. You turn up on the day with some idea of, well, you don't have to give a talk, but if you've got a talk you want to give, we encourage you to put it forward, and then we'll put together a schedule on Saturday morning, I think, and take it from there.
And talks can be about anything. It doesn't have to be hardcore geeky stuff. It can be anything sort of free culture. We had a lady who analysed pigs last year,
yes,
which was really good, and anything off the wall, a bit interesting, a bit different, would be really appreciated.
Yeah, and we had a whole mixture of stuff last year, and I think very few were actually deep techie things, so whatever you're interested in, really.
Yeah.
So and we, of course, need people to volunteer to be on the crew, because our fabulous crew last year just made the whole thing just...
Perfect.
Perfect,
yeah.
It really
absolutely.
Was.
So if you want to be on the crew, you can email ogcamp@ubuntu-uk.org, and we'll add you to the crew list. And Anna B is going to be our head of crew for this year. So she was helpful, very helpful last year, and is helping us out again. The hotels are filling up, apparently. It's a popular weekend in Liverpool.
It's a busy time in Liverpool that weekend.
There's a whole list of hotels on the oggcamp.org website. There isn't an official, single official hotel, so go to look at the list on the website and find one that suits your pocket and give them a ring.
And if you sign up on the Facebook fan page, we can get an idea of who's planning to come along, which was quite useful last year for knowing who was going to turn up in the door.
But you don't have to if you're not a Facebook fan, then don't worry about it. That's not a problem.
Yeah. And we currently have a raffle stash of prizes, which includes three, count them, three Viglan MPCLs, the never-ending Viglans.
We just can't get enough of those small machines.
Small, tiny little boxes that do 400 megahertz.
Yes.
From the lovely people at Viglan.
From the lovely people at Viglan. And we are planning to have mugs again. They were very popular last year. In fact, Simon's drinking out of one right now.
I would slurp, but it's empty.
Yeah, that's not a hint. So we're planning to have...
Why did you look at Laura? I didn't when you said it's not
Laura's
a hint.
Laura's tea girl.
Right, okay.
I didn't. And And we're planning to have mugs and probably some other merchandise. So if there's a particular things you'd like to see, I don't know, T-shirts, aprons.
Bandanas.
Remember mankinis, that it's a family show.
Whatever it
Did
is.
Did you say mankinis?
No, that was somebody else. Anyway, email in to ogcamp@ubuntu-uk.org and send us your suggestions.
And don't forget to visit the site, ogcamp.org.
Simon brings us Command 9 Love.
It's back. Just a quick one this week. Using XRander. One of the things I've struggled to find in the last couple of years is the minimum, maximum resolutions and things that you can get out of your graphics card.
Do you know I'm looking for this every day?
Sarcasm overload.
Well, anyway, using the command that's on the site, you can check out the minimum, current and maximum resolution possible with Xorg. This doesn't work with multiple monitors. I tried it on at work today, and it just gave you what it is currently set at. But anyway, have a go. Have a look. See if you can use it.
It's interesting, because on my laptop, I tried it, and it told me the minimum was like 320 by 200 or something.
Yep.
And it told me the maximum was the resolution it was running at the time, 1024 by 600, because it's got like a 9-inch screen.
Yeah.
But then after that, it said maximum 4096 by 4096, which I think is a limit of the driver or the card.
That's exactly the point. It'll tell you the absolute minimum and absolute maximum it can possibly do, even if the colours are way down. So that's pretty impressive. A little EPC.
Yeah. The only flaw in the plan is it doesn't work with if you're using the binary NVIDIA driver, sadly.
Well, that was proprietary software.
Yes. Should use Nuvo, shouldn't
that'll
you?
That'll learn you.
Yes. Well, I don't on this laptop, so that's all right. Yep. Saying if you did,
Well, that XRander is an amazing tool, really, and I think people should look at the other options it does as well.
It can sort of rotate displays and things as well, can't it?
Yeah,
funky.
Okay, hopefully at the time that this podcast goes out, an announcement has been made.
Otherwise, oops.
Yeah, otherwise we may have scooped it. What it's to do with, well, me and Davey will talk about it because Tony, Laura and Simon don't know what we're about to show them.
No, we're in the dark.
And so what we'll do is we'll talk about it while they open it now. We've got a little PDF for them to open. If they open it and have a look at it.
It's like Christmas.
So, Dave, you were in London today.
Yes, I was.
At Canonical. And this was all to do with what?
The Ubuntu artwork and sort of whole image has been going for about 6 years now. It's gone through various phases. What they're doing now is basically trying to re-identify the brand and bring it all a bit together. So I went up to the offices today, and they took us through their development process from the word go to what they're doing and how each part has changed. Now, I don't come from an artistic background or a desire. I mean, often I can see when people have come out with new images, things like that. And I think, oh, okay, well, they've done that. That might have taken a week or so. But the meticulous detail they've put in through these iterations, I'm thinking, wow, they really have been working hard.
Okay, let's take a step back and look at what they've done. So so what exactly is it? It's logo? Okay. It's
everything. Okay, so one of the major colours in Ubuntu at the moment is brown.
No, really?
Yeah. Everybody loves it.
Yeah. Now, over the last couple of releases or so, we've started seeing it go a little bit lighter.
A bit orangier.
Yeah. Now brown's been dropped. So we're looking at orange, a hint of purple, and some elements of grey coming in as well.
Ooh.
So that's quite... Oh, I say purple, but...
It's aubergine.
Yeah. I don't know. It's these designer types.
Of which we are not.
Yeah, so it was... and they're also making their own font as well. So basically a whole font is being developed for this.
So there's a logo change, colour change, and a font change.
Yes, yes.
And how far are they through that process?
At time of speaking, I think they've... probably got about 15 letters of the alphabet or so.
Of the English alphabet.
Yes, yeah. So they are working really hard. And, I mean,
it's not easy to design a font, is it? It's a really hard job.
Well, no, the thing is, we were looking at the different proof prints for each model and things like that. And it was even the C in the letter, they were trying to decide how to end it. Should it be sharp or should it be slightly angled? And there was, you know, the amount of options they were putting into that was...
It's not something you just, like, scribble on the back of a cigarette packet and go, right, there's my font.
Although there probably is a font that looks like it's been scribbled on the back of a
cigarette. That took weeks to design.
Now, actually, one of the other things we saw was the example desktop as well. And if chaps in the studio, if you just want to have a look at that now.
Yeah, okay. So I've not seen this yet, so we're just going to have a little look at the... there's a PDF document. The first page is quite purple with orange and white.
Oh, wow.
So, Simon, if you just scroll back to the first page.
Yeah, now, this doesn't do good podcast.
Yeah, I know. Simon, can you just read out what it actually says there?
It says, Ubuntu embodies freedom and is collaborative, precise, and reliable. This branding work celebrates who we are, where we've been, and where we are heading.
Yeah. Mm. Now, the actual words there's been tremendous detail from them words. They've thought about what them words actually mean and trying to sort of summarise in their own minds what them words
Not a mission mean. Statement.
Yeah. I mean,
well, it is.
Well, no, actually, in the office, what they had is for each one of them words, the freedom, the collaborative, precise, and reliable, they had a sheet of large paper and their pictures, what they thought summarised each of them.
So reliable is like a car, and
but they actually had a Saab,
not my car.
And I thought, is that like the most reliable car that they could come up with?
So they've obviously spent a lot of time on this.
Oh, yeah. About 8 months actually.
And it's very obvious they've got professionals. This isn't just a bunch of bored geeks sat in a room having a go. This is all good professional stuff.
So the first thing after the splash page is the new Ubuntu logo. So we're sitting here looking at it.
And what do you think, Tony?
What does it look like?
It is orange background, white text. The traditional sort of three people holding hands symbol
circle
is still...
Of
circle of friends. That's what it's called, isn't it? Right? I should probably know that. It's still there, but it's now all one colour. Mm-hmm. So the three different colours have gone. So it's the circle in orange on a white background, the circle of friends in orange on a white background, and a white Ubuntu text. It's difficult to describe a font on a podcast, but looks very...
The good thing is that we're going to put this podcast out after it's been announced, so everyone should be able to see this.
But it looks very clean, and it's not a very fancy font. There aren't sort of little bits sticking off all over the place.
One of the things they tried to really address with this one is the traditional Ubuntu title font, which we've currently got, has an almost childlike aspect.
Yeah.
So it was trying to make it all a bit cleaner and a bit more professional.
I think they've done that, yeah.
With the letters they've done so far. which is U-B-N-T-U.
The actual project manager of the design team came rushing back in the office and said, we've got an M! Like,
another letter.
Yes. Given birth.
Yeah, it was quite good. Now, actually, if you go back to... We've also got some screenshots as well, so I'm really interested to see what your reactions are to this.
Oh, okay.
So there's a dark screenshot and a light screenshot, and they've got a kind of the aubergine-y background.
It's purple desktop.
It's aubergine. Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is still work in progress, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. It's
purple. Is it that different? Really?
At the moment, in this screenshot, which is, as Dave says, is a work in progress, the icons and things are the same as far as I can see.
Yeah.
There's a different wallpaper. We tend to get new wallpapers every so often anyway.
Mm.
It's not hugely different.
Now, I actually really felt...
Some of the window decorations different.
I actually really felt OS X here. I really did. I thought, wow, this is...
Which one? The light or the dark?
A mixture of both. If you had halfway in between them...
Well, yeah, I mean, OS X has a light-coloured thing at the top and all the stuff is grey. And we were halfway there with Karmic. So, yeah, that's to be expected. So, you know, generally looks quite good, looks fresh.
Yeah, and as one of the things that Dave's linked us to is a sort of sample version of an Ubuntu page on the website. And that, again, looks very different, a lot more... white, I guess, a more white space on the page.
Yeah, I think some of the pages we've had in the past have been a bit busy. So, yeah, it does look a bit
Now, actually, if you scroll to the very bottom of that site, you'll notice there's a sort of pinpricks. Do you see them at the very bottom?
Yes, now, and they're on the PDF as well.
Yeah, now that's something that's being introduced to be... if you have them on a page, then it's more developer, more geeky based, because it's like technical drawing paper. You know, that's the sort of thing they're trying to bring
like
out.
A grid.
So if it's in depth and geeky, then there'll be some of that.
All right. But so if it's for general consumers, there won't be that.
Yeah. That's the sort of thing they're thinking. Yeah.
There's a bunch of symbols and things. There's like a fish in a fish bowl, a little bird, a bloke wearing glasses, and a brain.
Yeah.
What's all that about?
Okay, well, these are sort of icons that that are being pulled out to try and to allow to be reused for symbolising different things. Like, I'm not sure about what the fishbowl is, but I mean, the far one on the far right is based on sort of the micro blogging bird.
Oh, the Twitter bird, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And some of the other ones, I mean, it's basically icons but for different use, and they might bring them into the desktop eventually.
Okay, so... if this is going to be changing the desktop and changing the website and lots of other bits and bobs that go with Ubuntu, like, you know, t-shirts and brands all over the place, how's that going to affect loco teams who've got their own brand on their, the usual Ubuntu logo on theirs? Mm. How's it going to affect derivative distros and all these other people who depend or feed off of the Ubuntu stock stuff?
Yeah, it's still going to be using the existing trademark policy. Yeah,
well, I'm not necessarily thinking about trademarks, but just like in general.
Simon's got a jumper he'll need to replace now, for example. People have got business cards printed up with it on. And
I think the new fresh stuff is great and shows that you know where it's all going. But this is the legacy. This is where it came from. So in actual fact, you might see people
retro,
you know, doing the retro. Classic. Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think this stuff is going
to
go away.
Yeah, but also the design team's been very careful not to throw things away. So, for example, the Ubuntu Circle of Friends is still there.
Mm.
You know, so they've been very careful to keep things, you know, and not
the key
totally,
elements.
Like, yeah.
It's quite interesting, even just having seen this for about sort of 5-10 minutes while we've been talking and looking at Simon's sweatshirt, which has got the old Circle of Friends on, I'm thinking that the old one looks much more sort of childish, almost, you know, sort of bright and colourful.
Yeah.
I can see what they've done, and they've gone for a more mature look in the new one, and it's
more
worked,
serious.
I think. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So this is going to be announced on Wednesday, hopefully about the same time as this podcast comes out, if we edit it right.
Fingers crossed.
And we press the go button at the right time. And it'll be interesting to get some feedback from our listeners as to what they think about it.
Send us your views to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. It's time for the Bit About Ubuntu.
Gerald.
And the first thing in the Bit About Ubuntu this week is Full Circle Magazine, the unofficial community-maintained magazine for Ubuntu, have relaunched their own branded podcast. After an aborted attempt a couple of years ago, the team have regrouped and put out their first episode.
Hmm.
And has anybody listened to it?
I have.
Yes.
Okay. And?
It was good.
Yeah, it's a kind of mix of UPC and Tux Radar, I would say.
Okay. I've not listened to Tux Radar, but that's the Linux format podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's pretty good as well, actually.
But they're all UK-based, aren't they?
Yes.
And they sort of distribute recording and stuff, don't
they? Yeah, they're using the Big Bad Skype.
Ah, right, okay.
But, yeah, it's good. Actually,
for a first episode, I actually thought it was remarkable. I
was going to say that, but I didn't. You know, it's kind of patronising.
Well, we're very experienced
for a first episode.
No.
Very
good effort. What I mean is,
done.
No. with our first episode, I don't think
it was shockingly bad.
And you know, I think it's certainly worth checking out.
Definitely,
I really do.
Good. What's wrong with it? Yeah. You started on my editing.
No,
2 seasons later.
No, it was good. It was worth listening to. And they had areas of expertise. They had segments. They had nice little beds of music. They had intro, outro, and all that kind of stuff. It was nicely put together.
And they've also got 2 gamers as well, I understand. So, I mean, that's an aspect we don't really cover because none of us are really into games.
Yes, if you're into gaming, listen to them. If you're not, listen to us. Right?
Obviously, the difference is that they're using Skype. And some may think, oh, Skype, audio quality would be terrible. And it's not spectacular, but the good thing that I took from it is that actually the audio quality isn't that important. There's loads of good content, and it was interesting, and you know, more variety for Linux users out there to listen to.
I don't think necessarily Skype is the thing that makes the audio quality bad. I think often it's the hardware people have if they've got a cheap headset or something. You know, that is probably contributes more than the fact they're remote. I think the dynamicness and the immediacy of, you know, not being able to look someone in the face while you're talking to them.
Yeah, sure.
Well, as we found out, people will listen to anything.
Well, there is that, yeah. I'm sure, and it's a good podcast, so yeah, worth a listen.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a go.
Lucid, the next Ubuntu release that's due out in April, is just released Alpha 3.
Mm.
Anything good in it?
Yeah, it's all right, you know.
You're both running it, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got it on... this USB stick and another
laptop. Timbuntu.
Yes, Geekbox, Timbuntu, and a desktop and a laptop. So, yeah, it's all right.
Filed any bugs?
Yeah.
I've had a few. Yeah. There's one I haven't filed yet. My battery indicator on the laptop, it moves to the left.
Well, the actual indicator actually slides across the screen.
Yeah, it moves. Slowly it goes off, then it comes back on, and it's moved one pixel to the left.
Hang on.
It goes off, then it goes on.
It's crashing and restarting.
Hang on. If you right-click on it and select don't do silly things,
yeah.
Then stop doing
that's
that.
It's not an option.
No, he's got to edit the ETC conf.
Yeah, no, the G conf.
Don't do silly things equals one. Yeah.
If it keeps going, does it go off the side of the screen and then come back on the other side?
No, but it pushes everything off.
Does it all fall off the side of the screen and tumble on the floor?
But I think
the stain on the back.
I think the main thing I've seen for Alpha 3 is the boot speed. It's crazy fast.
No, it's not.
You're wrong.
I had Karmic on this before, and it booted in 21 seconds and it shut down in 6. And now it takes about a minute both ways.
Well, that's just your fault. I mean, what, everyone what else card, in the it? World.
Nvidia.
That's why, in my opinion.
Rip it out!
Yes.
Throw it away.
Issue number 1 of Ubuntu User magazine has been made available as a free download.
Yeah, that's rather good, isn't it?
Given
how expensive it is.
Yeah, but also given
print.
That's what, at least 6 months old now, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's still got articles stuff. It's content.
The page says it flew off the newsstands in spring 2009, so it's probably getting on for a year old. But anyway, you know, it's free. Have a look.
Yeah. I thought it was okay. You know, I just don't think it was worth £7.
Saying at the time it was, ooh, that's expensive. Yeah. And that's all in the bit about Ubuntu this time.
It's time for your feedback.
Yeah, we asked for your feedback last episode, and we have got...
Boy, did we get it.
We got a boatload. We obviously heard something very wrong.
We had to set up a whole new wiki to put it on.
Yes, a whole new thing. So, the first one that came in was from Zach, who left a comment on the site saying...
I've been missing the podcast and I thought I'd check and you just did one. Excellent, thanks.
Short but sweet. Thanks for that, Zach.
Josh commented and said,
nice job on the first episode of the season. I'm extremely excited about the new Ubuntu One Music Store coming in Lucid. Can you guys talk about that in the next episode?
Oh, I think we can manage that.
We could try.
I'd like to know what you think that the store will look like. Will it be an Amazon storefront e-music?
We've done that.
Also, I'm a noob. I've used several Ubuntu distros, Eft, Fawn, Gibbon, Koala.
Gibbon.
I've never heard them referred to like that.
But I've never upgraded from one release to another. I've made some modifications to my system. Just wanted your thoughts on tips, tricks when upgrading to a new release to minimize the impact.
Read the documentation.
That's very close to RTFM, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm mug with
that's the right answer. Read the upgrade manual because it tells you what will break. And if I just say press the upgrade button and it breaks, then you'll complain. So read the manual because it tells you what breaks.
And we'll probably discuss it after Karmic comes out anyway. So
yeah, that was 6 months ago. Comes
out. Lucid even.
Yeah, we'll discuss it 6 months ago.
But basically, it should be all right. Basically,
that's just a Tony guarantee.
Yeah, that's a Tony certified guarantee.
Josh, it will be all right.
You'll be fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Right,
Alan,
friend of the show and Twittering House owner Andy Stanford Clark wrote in to say,
"Hi, folks. Great to have you back in another season. We've missed you.
Oh,
Listening to the Read Write Web Facebook segment and hearing the four of you stumbling around the basic concepts of usability and trying to reinvent the well-known best practices for user-centric design on the fly, I couldn't help but thinking it was a pity there wasn't a professional user experience person sitting nearby that you could have pulled in to interview about it to get a more definitive view on how user interaction and design can be made in a way that makes applications usable by people with a range of application skills and goals. Oh, yes, there was. That would be you, wouldn't it, Laura?
Maybe.
Well, I think we might need to review the friend of the show bit.
Yeah.
Person who sticks the boot in on of the show.
To be fair, yes, we should have had Laura in that. But the goal of that that segment never intended being what it turned into. It was never intended to be that. So, yeah. Sorry. You don't care, do you? You just wait till the microphone's off and then have a go at me.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Stuart Langridge, who we just interviewed, posted a link to the MSDN blog about why Windows doesn't have an expert mode.
Yeah, this was why we were all talking about beginner mode, expert mode.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's quite a nice short blog post, and there's lots of comments after it, but he sums it up quite pithily. We can stick a link in the show notes.
Mm. Excellent.
Basically says it doesn't work, and it's stupid.
Colin Mills emailed in to tell us,
I'm 65 and have been using Ubuntu since the days of Dapper Drake, and there's no such thing as the average user.
I disagree, but go on.
Windows users don't try Linux for a number of reasons. The myths include, I don't want to use an application where I have to run everything in text mode. It's free, so it can't be any good, and it doesn't look like Windows. We need to encourage schools to use open source technology, since once users have been introduced to Windows, there seems to be a general inertia and lack of interest in trying any alternative. If we want to make Linux mainstream, we need to make sure that schools are aware of the cost benefits of switching to open source, so that people grow up being aware that there are alternatives out there.
I think there's no such thing as average user. The Read Write Web Facebook thing clearly shows there is. There is a huge number of people who are the same kind of people.
So we're talking about
who are the non-technical, not expert users. And because there's a huge number of them, that makes them the average.
You're talking about the modal average rather than yes. median or anything.
Make careful when you get down off that soapbox. It's a long way down.
That's quite a horse you're on. It's very high, isn't it?
You'll need oxygen horse up there.
I'll calm down now.
It's actually right about the schools bit. Both my kids use Ubuntu. I don't know how I'd get them to push it to their mates, though, apart from giving them a stack of disks to hand out. But certainly my kids think it's fantastic and tell everybody, so when their mates come around, they'll see it and they use it as well. So
he also has a valid point about the inertia and people recommending Windows to other people. Like, my mum's never had a computer before, and I was looking at setting a computer up, and my brother and sister both said to her, don't let Alan talk you into using Ubuntu.
Nice.
You should use Windows. And the reason they said it is because that my brother and sister could both support her. Now, despite the fact that neither of them work in IT, both of them have Windows machines that have been compromised by viruses recently.
And fix them.
And I fix them. They think they're the best suited people to give my mum advice on how to run a Windows PC.
Yeah, but also Microsoft's doing the big advertising thing, which they've never really done the same before. I mean, tonight we've seen two Windows 7 adverts. Windows 7 adverts, yeah. And we never watch live TV normally.
And I heard on Radio 1 on the way over here that Internet Explorer 8 is the best browser available by far.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, is this part of that browser choice thing?
Yeah. Oh, it's stitches. It's so funny.
Russ Axford from Somerset emailed in a suggestion to improve the experience for new users. He writes,
the challenged Facebook users are potential Ubuntu users, even the target audience.
Yes!
okay. When they buy their Windows boxes, they have a quick start guide with more help once they have set up the computer. Why don't we do the same with Ubuntu? A quick start guide, which we users can print off and give a disk to a Windows user. Also a PDF file on the desktop once the live disk has been loaded or Ubuntu installed. This would be a simply worded guide to installing extra software. Explain which program to use for various tasks, how to set up a printer, scan a webcam, etc. I'm thinking of something professionally produced, not the amateurish stuff that the community think which I might be capable of.
Oh, so he's saying not the amateurish thing that
he would be capable of.
Not the amateurish. Well, the Ubuntu manual. that's precisely what the goal is of the Ubuntu manual project, is to create a document you can print off or have as a PDF as a beginner's guide. Yeah, absolutely.
Andy Piper mentioned something similar, but it was about a video like you get at the start of a Windows installation, I think.
That nobody watches.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think the wiki tried to first try and achieve this. I think it's been excellent building blocks. But, I mean, this manual project, I mean, we should really interview the chap behind that.
Mm.
Good idea. We had this voicemail from Brian.
Hi, this is Brian in West Yorkshire. One way of solving the dilemma of what programs should be included in a distro would be to, during install, ask users to select Basic, Advanced or Custom. Then present the same page to everyone, but with different boxes being checked, and a good description of what each app can do. As for many, the names of the apps presented will be unfamiliar. Another approach might be to ask the user what they wanted out of the distro, then go from there, perhaps downloading and installing some apps live off the net.
Well, it's interesting, but that kind of goes back to the post that Stuart gave us about the advanced button thing. But we do kind of already have that on the alternate CD. You have Task Cell.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, we've got the options of Ubuntu Cloud and Mythbuntu backend, Mythbuntu front-end.
That's a different target audience, though.
Oh, yes, definitely.
No, but the idea behind having a button you press that says, I'm going to do media stuff on
actually,
here, and bing, you get the right packages.
Something which has been successful in that, particularly, is the LAMP one that installs, you know, installs Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Just being able to install one thing and just get the whole thing through a semi-graphical option, I know people have actually quite liked.
And that's good if you know what all the options are and you know that you want a subset of them. I think the difference is when you've got somebody just wanting the internet and MSN messaging, then they don't care what the whole is, they just want to get on with it.
Yeah. Maybe we should have a setup where you get like nothing, you know, you get like a browser, and as soon as you try and open a .doc, it goes, oh, you need OpenOffice, and then goes and gets it and installs it. And and when you try and open a Visio document, it installs Windows.
Oh, really?
I just like the first EPC UI?
The Zandros one.
We had sort of big square buttons and things. I thought that was brilliant.
I loved it.
It's fantastic.
I know loads of
I didn't like it.
I know people did. Well,
yeah, but that's because you're a geek.
Fussy geeks.
Yeah, fussy geeks.
I thought it was brilliant. Just for all, it just had like messaging, internet, email.
I used to go down to the local curry house, and while I'm waiting for my curry, I'd sit there with my EPC and sit on their free Wi-Fi.
You must look really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Henson Sturgill wrote in to say,
I work in the computer repair for a large company, and you've no idea how right on your read-write web story was. I think the default version of Ubuntu should have a default resolution of 800 by 600, because some folks don't understand why the internet no longer takes up the entire screen at higher resolutions. Only have four large icons, which would be a wireless wizard that would guide them through connection to Wi-Fi, Chrome browser with pre-installed most visited thumbnails for Facebook, MySpace, etc. Abbey Word, since most people don't use the presentations and spreadsheets features of OR, and some music player with built-in store. Ubuntu officially has one, right?
Yes, it does that.
Yes, I left out email client because most people don't know what POP or IMAP server is and just check mail over HTTP.
Yeah. See, the problem with these, any mail or any comment that I see that says, most people do this or most people are like this.
I do that.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, or someone I know does that.
In his experience, he's a computer repair guy.
Yeah, totally. But the problem is that, and he has a perception of it, and it may well be right. And, you know, I agree with him largely, but equally, you'll get a reply from someone who says, but I need Inkscape. I must have Inkscape. Or, you know,
Ubuntu's no good if it hasn't got the GIMP installed.
Exactly.
But as we all know, it's just an apt getaway.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or if you double-clicked on a thing and it went and auto-did it, that would be lovely.
It's known as progressive disclosure.
And
technical term.
Henson also adds,
he does. He adds, I think Google was genius merging the search and address bar into a single bar.
This is on Chrome, or Chromium, I guess.
Firefox already did. Yeah.
Isn't that the awesome bar or something?
Hmm. Awesome.
Although, arguably, they all do it. Because Internet Explorer, if you typed something in Internet Explorer 6, it would...
It goes to MSN, it would, if you can't find it.
It will take you to their own server provider,
Depends. My provider at home is Virgin, and depending on how I do it, it goes to the Virgin search engine.
Nice.
So,
yeah, they mangle your DNS.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
DNS manglers. Yeah. Google DNS for the win.
Aldo Noguera left a comment on the site.
Maybe the I just want to log into Facebook effect has something to do with the Firefox's awesome bar. When you type in a word, it goes to the first link in a Google search for that word. Actually, I couldn't figure out exactly what the algorithm is, but it seems to do this sometimes.
It's just awesome.
It is awesome.
Although, how many of us actually still use Firefox?
I do.
I
occasionally.
Do
you use Chromium now?
Yeah.
Cool.
Finally, Patrick Archibald tweeted,
looking forward to the new episode. Feel free to plug ogcasts.com if you like it. Lists dents and feeds from ogcasts.
Yeah, it's quite cool. It's a very simple site, and it just lists a bunch of podcasts or ogcasts or whatever you want to call them down the left-hand side. And when you click on one of them, it shows you all the dents on the right-hand side that mention that podcast.
Oh, right, okay. So we could use that when we're recording to find out what the feedback is.
We could, yeah.
And it looks like there are about 10...
It's like a mini podcast,
yeah. on the side of which we're one.
Yeah, we're the bottom one, so we need to change our name to AAA Ubuntu.
did we submit to that, or did that just
appear? No, they did it off their own back.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, it was Patrick himself, actually, I think he did it.
Thank you, Patrick.
Well done.
And that's all your feedback.
And that's the end of the show.
That was rather fast.
That is record time.
What was that, 2 hours?
To a little bit hours, it's massive. It's all the sugary drinks. It's the
sugary
Alex
drinks and the chocolate. Yeah. No. Right, ready to do another episode. Come on, let's go.
No, leave my house now. we're not going to read out all the ways you can get in touch. You can find those out from our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including our voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds.
Yeah. See you on the next show.
Thanks for listening.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.